The meaning of dandelions. From The Secret Language of Plants. By Andrina. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 4. The Third Year. Ron wrote to Harry to reassure him that he shouldn't be upset about the trial. After seeing Malfoy, it had become very obvious why the court was so hostile. Harry still felt terrible about the things they had said about the Weasleys, but Ron said no one really minded, which Harry didn't believe, and that the twins were pretty proud of being such well-known pranksters, having obviously surpassed something called marauders. This Harry did believe. Anyway, Mr. Weasley had won some unexpected money, and they would all be going to Egypt to visit Bill, but Ron wanted to check that Harry was being treated well. He was. Dumbledore had worked his magic, and talked to the Dursleys. He was allowed out of the room and ate decently, even if he had to do it in the kitchen. His cousin Dudley fluctuated between trying to scare Harry and being scared of his potential magic, but after having been so close to going to the Malfoys, Harry had absolutely no complaints. And he could listen to music as much as he wanted to, as long as he remembered to buy extra batteries whenever he was out. Harry didn't pay much attention to the neighbors, but his aunt did. She observed, like a hawk perched on a high rock, the group of people dressed in purple and green that moved into the house across the street. She kept watch until Vernon called her to come see the news, which had the morbid story of two dangerous felons escaped from a prison. One of them was Harry's dad, and Harry couldn't believe it, wouldn't believe it if it weren't for the now obvious increased security cordon around him. Security against who, Harry wasn't sure.
"Okay, but you couldn't have done it all by yourself."
Sirius had his nose buried in an empty cup of coffee, relishing the lingering smell. "Were you always this talkative?"
"Yes. Anyway, you must have had help."
"Help? From a wizard?" Remus sounded scandalized, and Sirius felt something warm inside. Remus could be hilarious and subtle, won't even see the end of the punchline ways. But he was sick, and he was worried, and he hadn't been up for much joking. Sirius had. Sirius was aware that he was talking non-stop, as if he were making up for the 12 years of solitude and mad rambling. He had rolled around the first patch of grass they came across and laughed like a loon. Remus had joined him, and he had laughed too, and got a smudge of green on his cheeks. He had walked barefoot over every new surface. He had hugged a tree. There was so much he hadn't done during those 12 years.
"But Sirius, you must see. No respectable wizard would ever mingle with a dark creature such as myself."
"That only eliminates the Blacks, the Malfoys, and the Abbots. No one else is truly respectable."
Remus snorted. That was good.
"You," said Harry with absolute and complete earnest honesty, "are a very good dog."
Sirius wagged his tail. What else could he do? Harry was scratching behind his ears and petting his flank like it was his one job in life. Maybe it was. Maybe Harry had some sort of uncommon magical affinity with animals or something, because Sirius had gone to Privet Drive with every expectation to remain out of view, and yet the moment Harry stepped out of the house, he had zoomed in on him.
"The very best dog," Harry said.
He was smiling and he was still petting Sirius, but his voice was a bit sad. How could there be so much joy and sadness mingled together?
"Harry! Get away from that filthy dog immediately!"
The moment the woman went back inside the house, Harry was again in the garden, this time with a bowl of water for Sirius. Sirius would have turned human then, taken Harry with him that very instant. But he had no wand, and in that short interval, he had spotted someone else keeping an eye on the hedge of the house. All he could do was keep pretending he was a lost dog, and take the hug Harry gave him, burying his face in his flank.
"I saw Harry,"
announced Sirius back in the abandoned warehouse they were using as a base.
"I know you told me not to, but I had to see him. Remus, he looks just like James, and he's so nice. He saw me and he petted me and he looked so happy. A bit sad too, but happy to see a dog. I noticed there were a few wizards around the house, but they didn't suspect me. I think I might be able to sneak back. Maybe pass him a message. And I know we have no safe house and no wands, but you have let me talk a lot. You're not yelling at me for going to see him."
Remus was so pale. Azkaban had really taken a toll on his health, and the transformations without Wolfsbane or any kind of medicine left him with no energy to heal and get better. Sirius was already healing, despite their precarious situation and the scarce meals. Remus was not. He was sitting in a crate, a ragged blanket over his shoulders to keep away the chill from the wall.
"Only one."
"I saw the wizards too, while you were madly risking your freedom."
Remus spoke carefully, choosing every word according to the strength he still had. They are here for us.
That's understandable.
But that wasn't it. Remus had a wrinkled newspaper in his hands. Sirius spied a photo of himself on the cover. A wizarding newspaper, then, taken from the trash of the surveillance house. The cover and the first three pages were about them, which Sirius considered an achievement, even if they were concerned with slandering the two of them. But page 7 talked about the winners of a lottery, and there Sirius saw the third marauder. Harry's return to school went like this. Ron and Hermione fought incessantly over their pets. Mr. Weasley took him aside and told him that, yes, Sirius Black was going after him, but Harry wasn't supposed to know, and while the Ministry believed Black and Lupin were working together, Mr. Weasley was sure this was not the case. He urged Harry to remain safe and not put himself in danger by trying to contact Remus. Harry saw the Dementors up close in the train back to Hogwarts, and he was sick at the thought of those creatures guarding prison cells. He also met the new DADA teacher, who, coincidentally, was a freaking Auror. He sat side by side with Ginny for the remainder of the trip, and they shared a chocolate bar. McGonagall took him aside and told him that, yes, Sirius Black was going after him, but Harry wasn't supposed to know, and she hoped he wouldn't do anything rash, like trying to contact his stepfather.
"Professor, I would never," Harry said in earnest innocence.
He saw the corner of McGonagall's mouth twitch.
"I'm not reckless."
She had called Remus his stepfather. She had, perhaps, finally come to his side. Draco found Potter in a side corridor near the dungeons. They were alone, and Draco saw it was a wonderful opportunity. To do what, he didn't know, but Potter was alone in a little frequented dark corner, with his back to Draco. This was the occasion to do something that would please Father. Potter had his face to the wall, lips almost kissing the stone. He was hissing and whistling. Then he turned his head and put his ear against the wall. "Yes, twice a week," he said. Then he hissed some more. Draco stared. He didn't think he had ever seen Potter like that, not angry and not miserable. He was almost normal, except for the whistling and spitting at a random piece of wall in a dark corridor, but it was Potter. You couldn't demand much of the boy.
"You're very welcome. Enjoy your dinner,"
Potter said. Draco left silently. His father wouldn't be satisfied with him merely punching Potter anyway.
"Hey guys, what are you doing?"
"Hey, Seamus, how was summer? We're boiling all of Harry's belongings."
Seamus Finnegan looked with interest at the trunk that Ron, Harry, and Dean were carrying down. If it were a practical joke, he thought that Harry shouldn't be present. Harry, who, it must be said, was currently dressed only in a bathrobe that may or may not belong to Neville Longbottom. He'd had to roll up the sleeves because it was too big for him.
"What's taking so long?"
called Hermione from downstairs.
"Need any help?"
asked Seamus. This was not pyrotechnics, but it looked like an opportunity to practice water explosions.
"Sure, bring the books, will you?"
Hermione had stopped her fighting with Ron over her cat at Harry's mention that this year the Ministry had gotten all of his school supplies for him. You know, in case the famous murderer whose face everybody knew came down a busy Wizarding Market street to kill Harry. She had stopped fighting and her face had changed. Everything that could be safely boiled was put into a pile to be taken to the girls' bathroom on the second floor. Everything else went to a second pile to be examined later, after Hermione figured out how to remove the Inquisitor Secreta she was sure had been put there.
"Hermione, not the broom!" cried Oliver Wood.
"Yes, the broom too. Who knows it could be in the straw?"
"They're called bristles, you heathen!"
Oliver managed to save Harry's broom from the boiling pile. He spent the rest of the evening in a corner of the common room, clutching it with both arms and legs. This opened the dam. Hermione explained what they were doing, and even showed them one of the little blackened wires she had kept from the first year in a glass jar in her potion set. At once they all threw themselves to the entertaining activity of rummaging through Harry's stuff and seeing if they could spot any more Inquisitors, and if they could be removed without boiling them in water. Harry sat on an armchair with his Walkman and cassettes safe on his lap while everything else he owned was ransacked. It was almost a purifying experience, all his material belongings exposed and analyzed in the open. Colin Creevy had a small fit when he discovered that Harry was reading Muggle literature in his spare time. He too had read Treasure Island. Who was Harry's favorite character? Collins was Jim. Did Harry know there was an animated movie? It was set in space. It all looked mental and a bit of a silly game until Alicia Spinett raised Harry's Transfigurations book, moved it this way and the other under the light, and announced there was something on the spine. Everybody took a step back at Hermione's furious intake of breath. Oliver clutched the broom tighter. A total of 27 wires were located in Harry's things.
The ones in his robes could be removed, but they had no idea what to do with the others, and after Seamus set an armchair on fire for the third time, he was not allowed to try anymore. Percy had been lenient enough. For the moment, they found a short-term solution in switching Harry's things with someone else's. Parvati gave to Harry her sister Padma's books, and the matter of how to remove an Inquisitor became Ravenclaw's problem. Fred and George asked to keep Harry's inkwell so they could study the thing better. Angelina Johnson switched him his telescope. Harry started the term grinning, which said nothing good for his already shaky reputation about his mental balance.
"Harry, I can't believe you," chastised Hermione. "That was a terrible breach of privacy that the Ministry did."
But it was a wonderful thing that half the Gryffindor house had come to his help, even though Harry was pretty sure that they were the same half he had madly fought on his first term.
"Not to speak of the raving lunatic that wants to kill you,"
pointed out Ron, ever supportive. Ron was very grounding.
"I don't see why he should be more successful than Voldemort," answered Harry brazenly.
Murderous lunatic or not, the important thing was that Remus was out. Yes, Hermione believed that he must have escaped in order to stop Black from murdering Harry, and given what little Ron had learned about Black, Remus didn't have good chances, but he was out. All Harry had to do was get out of Hogwarts, too. If the Dementors were there for their protection, why were they looking in instead of out? Shouldn't they be with their backs to the school? Harry could see them when he climbed to the aviary to sit by the roof, and when he went to the astronomy tower, ragged, dreadful things floating in the air. Hermione was really worried about all the classes she missed last year, and so was Ginny. Both girls were studying a lot. Harry had also missed a lot of classes, even though he had been physically there. He was now incredibly behind, and annoyingly not much worried about it. But at least he started to take some notes in class. Not necessarily related to the subject matter, but hey, he was writing. That totally counted as schoolwork. Some sadistic and tortured soul had decided to schedule the Gryffindor-Slytherin third-year DADA class together. Why would they do that? Why did they want to spread tears and hate in the world? Gryffindor and Slytherin did not work well together. They just didn't. More often than not, they only shared the potions class because it didn't require wand work, and the most they could exchange in that class was some insults and taunts and the occasional thrown ingredient. Same with care of magical creatures. In DADA, they had their wands out, and they were working with dangerous creatures and curses. But if it had to happen, at least it was during the year Kingsley Shacklebolt asked for leave of absence in the Auror office and become the new DADA teacher at Hogwarts. Shacklebolt was smart and had quick reflexes, so not only was he able to finally teach them something useful, but he could also stop the students from killing or permanently injuring each other while he taught. Shacklebolt certainly hadn't expected such hard, torturous labor. He had Gryffindor Slytherin for the first, third, fifth, and seventh years. "Good luck," is what the older Weasley, Percival, had told him after leaving his class. Good luck. McGonagall had said the same, and he had understandably thought they meant the third year with the infamous Wild Potter. Poor kid, Shacklebolt felt bad for him. They hadn't warned him about the twins, the bastards. That's what they meant. Good luck with the twins, they are the devil's spawn. They were actually very good students, and they paid attention. That was the problem. He seriously feared for Cassius Warrington's chances of surviving the year. Kingsley Shacklebolt was a senior Auror who had only taken this job as an extra precaution against Black and Lupin coming to kill the little Potter. He had honestly thought the two felons would be the hardest part of an otherwise uncomplicated year. He never expected to drag himself to bed every night exhausted, to sweat so much and to exert himself trying to keep the children from harming each other. His reflexes had never been so good. Not every kid in class managed to defeat the boggart. That was all right. You could simply step back to the circle and the boggart would focus on someone else. You could still learn a lot just from watching others. Harry didn't get to face the boggart. Shacklebolt said that was fine. He didn't want the class panicking at the presence of Lord Voldemort, and Harry gave him a funny look. Voldemort? Certainly not. Even with the creepy double head thing, Harry just couldn't bring himself to be scared of a man who felt like he had to hide under a ridiculous pen name. His middle name was Marvolo. Marvolo, incredibly cool sounding and promising, and he had to change it for Voldemort, please. Now, if Harry was scared, it would be either a Dementor or Sirius Black, mad and cold as he was in the pictures, lashing out against Remus, or the men from the Ministry coming to take Severus. But that didn't worry Harry. Fear was something you learned to live with and worked around. He was a Gryffindor, and yet he was scared all the time. Even if he couldn't cast Ridiculous, he doubted the boggart would have much effect on him. It would be yet another frightening thing in Harry's life, and he would muddle through as he always did. Being afraid is not a reason to stop working. Besides, Harry's mind was moving constantly. Would the boggart be able to fix on a single image? And talking of wandering minds, Harry was thinking now of the brief flash of black and silver he had seen when the boggart got closer to the Slytherin group. It had been a quick shape, between a werewolf with blood-stained fangs and a wrinkly old woman with a wand that looked like a huge needle. A figure tall and slim and elegant even in the silhouette. A figure of black, with a silver mane on its back, standing there for just a second. Of course, the Gryffindors had honked the boggart, so the Slytherins didn't get much chance of practicing against it. Severus felt like he had all the weight of the world not over his shoulder but between his temples and the bridge of his nose. He was having the worst headaches. Sirius Black had escaped Azkaban. No one had ever managed to escape that accursed prison, and he had done it. Remus Lupin was free, too. He was free, and Severus was not surprised, because of course Remus would do whatever it took to protect Harry, even kill his insane best friend, the traitor. A black is a black, after all. Severus didn't know why everyone had been that surprised. It wasn't the first time the blacks went for some deferred murder. Murder. Black would come for Harry, no doubt. Even if Remus found him first. Sirius had killed his other friend, hadn't he? But if Remus wasn't there to stop him, what good were the Dementors around the school when Black had already slipped past them? Severus thought he would never again experience such fear, such physical reaction of dread and disgust as when he realized what was going to happen to Lily, despite his best efforts to stop it. Or rather, as when he realized how far he had been willing to lower himself, how debauched and polluted, how sullied, to get a mere glimpse of approval and something that passed for affection. It had been a nausea that took over all of his body, a feeling of uncleanness that clung to him for many years. He thought that the corruption would be over his skin forever, just as that dreadful tattoo. He hadn't accounted for the cleaning capacities of a 7-year-old sticky hug full of sugar and syrup. And later on, every caress of Remus that was like forgiveness and redemption. He had thought he would never again experience such fear. Even when they came and took Remus from him before he had even dared to call him his, even then he hadn't felt such terror. Perhaps it had been the shock. He hadn't expected for Remus to be condemned to Azkaban. Severus was very good at denial. But now everything had come together. The fear for Harry and for Remus, the constant reminder that Lily's murderer was free while she was dead. The compulsion to check his forearm again and again. Severus was feeling less than patient. 3 weeks, maybe four, in the semester, and Harry stuck his hand inside Longbottom's cauldron. Severus would have slapped him right then, because putting your hand inside a cauldron was a death-seeking, dangerous thing to do, except that Longbottom had forgotten to add the newt's eyes, and he had put daisies instead of digitalis essence, so the brew was nothing more than disgusting soup at best. Harry put his hand inside the cauldron, and making eye contact with Severus, his expression one of secure arrogance just like his father, knocked the cauldron over.
"Just leave Neville alone. Mr. Longbottom demonstrates a criminal lack of sense or knowledge, and he would do well to smarten up.
But Severus, so do I."
Harry was looking at him with a devastated expression. The room still smelled faintly of daisies.
"He's bad at potions. Making him dose his own pet won't make him any better. Just keeping me for days and days for evening lessons won't make me able to transform a frog."
How arrogant Harry looked, just as his father did that fateful night in the headmaster's office, when he claimed all responsibility for himself to exculpate Sirius and Remus. How very much like Lily, though, to plead for someone else. Severus didn't know what to say. The smell of daisies made him feel ashamed.
"I can't allow for Mr. Longbottom's incompetence in class."
"All right, but you don't have to scare him."
Harry cleaned up the potion, by hand, because he had emptied it out on purpose, after all. But that didn't take very long. He spent the rest of his detention time drinking tea with Severus. They were both careful not to talk any more of the school or the news or the Dementors or Remus. That was for the next day. For of course Snape had given him a 3-day detention. Anything less would be out of character. But for now, today, it was enough to talk about plants and potions and books, and how Harry thought he was very close to making his Walkman work.
"People must have been looking for Harry when you took him. It couldn't just be anyone who had helped you," reasoned Sirius.
It was cold, and they were both dressed inadequately, although they had managed to procure some coats. They were not much closer to rescuing Harry or capturing Peter, although they at least had managed to get to Scotland. Remus was starting to think that they hadn't approached this right. They had evaded capture so far, but they needed to find a proper base and supplies, or whether they were captured or not would become pointless. They'd had to steal 3 times so far. He didn't like it.
"Someone with advanced spellcasting and defense against the dark arts," mused Sirius.
He was sitting pressed closely against Remus, for warmth and also for the small spot of sunlight. After Azkaban, they were both attracted to any sun rays they could get. Sirius sometimes stopped to stare at flowers, mesmerized, and he had been brought to tears by the first yellowing leaves of a tree. Remus didn't comment because he had had a similar reaction at the sight of a sparrow. How Harry liked animals. How many stupid birds thrown or fallen from their nests he had helped him nurse to health.
So, an oral. But who would... I just can't see anyone like that going against Dumbledore. Other woman, perhaps. Yes, a woman would understand. Oh my God, Mooney, you're in cahoots with Alice Longbottom, you fox.
How do you answer that?
Sirius. Yeah, stop trying to guess, Sirius. It was all me, because I can't risk giving up the name of my accomplice, he sing-sung. But I'm right, aren't I?
Sirius, you know why the Lestranges were sent to Azkaban, don't you?
Oh, yeah. They attacked the Longbottoms, yes, but they were captured.
The sunlight was golden and warm, the forest picturesquely pretty. Why was it that small tragedies like this had to take place in beautiful spaces? Not the Longbottoms, but the blow he was about to deliver to Sirius. I'm very sorry, Sirius. Frank and Alice never recovered. If he weren't so tired and cold, Remus would excuse himself to let Sirius cry in solitude. Instead, he put a long arm over his shoulders and gently drew him against his chest and let him mourn, as they all had 12 years ago. Last year there was a monster roaming the corridors of Hogwarts, and Harry still had to attend the school. He failed to see the reasoning that made them deny him Hogsmeade privileges just because he didn't have a signed paper. Who was supposed to sign it in any case? Bunch of hypocrites. Harry was morosely contemplating the happy students on their way to the village when Fred and George took him aside. This wasn't necessarily a good thing, because sometimes they needed subjects to try new things, and they didn't always ask for permission from said subjects. The week they learned how to cast the potato nose curse was a hard week in the boys' dormitory in Gryffindor. But today wasn't about that. Instead, they ceremoniously bequeathed Harry the Marauder's map, with an immediate explanation of how to locate the closest secret passage to Hogsmeade. Harry couldn't believe their generosity. It was a wonderful thing, being able to go to Hogsmeade, but beyond that, Harry liked to study the map and compare it with the mental image he had created in his mind. There were dozens of rooms and stairs he didn't know about. There was also a sad lack of roof inclusion. It seemed only he liked to sit on the roofs. Now when he wandered at night, for he still had trouble falling asleep some nights, he walked under the cloak with the map and his Walkman, deaf and unseen like a specter. Severus Snape was not having a good year. And now he saw that it was going to get worse, and he was just so tired. So tired that it took him almost 2 months to notice. By then all of the bruises had gone, all the evidence. Not that he could show them to anyone other than to Draco himself and prove to him that there was no point in lying to Severus. But now when he talked to Draco, he would deny it all, and he would get defensive, and Severus couldn't even press on the bruise or roll up his sleeve to stop the nonsense. Draco would be distrustful and even aggressive, not because he was a Malfoy, but because, and this Severus understood very well, no child ever admits that their parents do anything wrong, not with the truly important matters. That ability only comes with adulthood. Still, Severus had a talk with him, and Draco did get defensive and left his office muttering to himself that Severus was a filthy half-blood anyway, and what did he know? Severus had excellent hearing. He called Draco back immediately. Draco, who stared back at him with a defiance that belonged in Gryffindor and a hollowness, a deep sorrow that Severus had only seen before in Harry during that fateful first year of school. How many people knew that Severus was a half-blood? Very few, he was sure. It was not the kind of information you advertised when you joined a blood supremacist group. Unsurprisingly, Lucius was less careful with secrets than Severus. He had given up the Dark Lord's diary for Merlin's sake. The man had no sense of what secrecy meant. Severus looked at Draco. He had stopped wearing the sling after just a few days, but Flint had made him wear it again so they could get some extra time to train for Quidditch. Severus didn't fault Flint. It was a good opportunity, and he had seized it. Given that the team was rather more lumbering than skillful, Severus was glad for the extra time. He didn't like or care about Quidditch, but he enjoyed ribbing Minerva, who took it as a personal insult to her clan. "Perhaps Madame Pomfrey should have a closer look at your clavicle," Severus said as if nothing had happened, pointing to Draco's left shoulder, even though his injured arm was the right. "I do hope your injury won't prevent you from playing Quidditch." Draco looked completely lost. In other circumstances, his worried expression and having perhaps overreacted and said too much and insulted his professor and head of house over nothing would be pretty funny. He had overreacted. Malfoys were very dramatic, and so were the Blacks. It was a mystery that the child wasn't throwing more tantrums considering his heritage. Really, Draco's restraint of himself was commendable.
I...
You nothing, Draco, you senseless, proud child. Severus ached for him. Draco looked down at the completely healed arm that Hagrid's beast had injured. Of course, Lucius was demanding the immediate sacking of Hagrid. Unlikely, Dumbledore had come to his defense, and the execution of the Hippogriff, very likely. Severus couldn't say that it surprised him. Lucius was a terribly possessive man, after all, even if he wasn't given to treating his possessions with care. So he would beat his own son, but he would be absolutely furious if anyone else hurt him.
Do come see me, if you get any other injuries. Practicing Quidditch.
Right. I will do that, Professor. Poor Draco looked just as tired as him. Severus made a note of finding some way to cheer him up, because Draco did not have the mental stamina to endure this. No Black ever had. How perfectly ironic that the year Hogwarts knew more gloom, the year the castle was warded not only by spells but by Dementors too, was the year Harry got music back. He was about to flunk charms, because no matter how good his intentions for this year, after two courses not paying attention, he was now only barely able to perform the most basic spells, and yet here he was with a functioning Walkman that everyone said he couldn't possibly have. He wasn't sure how exactly he had done it, other than that it was a process rather than a single-time spell. It was a Saturday, with most of the castle gone to Hogsmeade. Harry would have gone too. The twins had been really generous there, really generous. Harry didn't know how to repay them, but he was supposed to go to detention later. He didn't remember for what or with whom. Maybe it wasn't detention, but one of those reinforcement classes, where a teacher pushed, and Harry tried, but still everyone left tired and grumpy, and Harry wasn't any closer to getting whatever they wanted him to do right. Harry wasn't particularly proud of it, but he had once gotten really close to giving Professor Flitwick a meltdown. He had patted the poor man on the arm, and assured him that it was not his fault that Harry could only levitate objects once out of every 5 tries. Anyway, he had been sitting in the roof below the aviary. It was cold in there, and the wind pushed hard, but it was nothing for a Quidditch player. And he liked the feeling of the sun and the clean air, like he was the first person getting it, before it got all used by the people below. He had the Walkman with him, because he carried it everywhere out of habit, just as he always had a book with him. His wand he didn't forget anymore, because he didn't take it out of his school bag after classes, and during the day he wore it in a wristband Ginny had made him. But the Walkman, that was with him always. He had been remembering the songs in the tape. Sometimes he got the cassette to move, but no sound would come. Now he was remembering the music in his head while he looked at the little wheels of the tape turning just like that. Music started to come out, faint at first, until it got some more strength. And Harry could hear plain as day the voice of Sir Michael Philip Jagger telling him about his narrow preference of color palette. No wonder Severus liked this song. It was not Ron, although he liked the music, nor Hermione, who still couldn't believe the Walkman worked. The one who reacted with cheers at the news was Dean, Muggleborn Dean, who immediately promised to bring Harry as many cassettes as he could find during Christmas break. The Walkman worked erratically. Some areas of the castle were better than others to listen to music. Sometimes it started as soon as Harry pressed play, and sometimes he had to hum a bit to get the device moving. More comically, sometimes the Walkman decided that a particular song was especially good, so it would play it for all to hear, even if Harry was wearing earphones. It may have developed a bit of a personality, the Walkman. Every time Oliver Wood was nearby, it would play Eye of the Tiger. Katie Bell learned the lyrics by heart, and the twins made a dance to it that they performed before every match.
I don't think the goblins like us very much.
From what I remember from Binns's classes, we have done little more with them other than fighting.
I put a mail order for a firebolt, and Gringotts actually approved the payment from my account.
You what? He's my godson. He deserves having the best broom.
Sirius, we are fugitives of the law.
And yet the goblins said nothing. I don't think they like wizards very much.
This is why Remus had taken to meditation. Not to attempt to manage his potionless transformations, no, but to deal with his demented friend. Harry didn't like keeping secrets from his friends, and yet he found himself keeping plenty of them. He was so young, and he knew so many secret and hidden things. Some were big and felt like a cave inside a mountain, the entrance hidden under a boulder. Some were like a small pebble, like a smooth stone with a hole inside. These were some of the big ones. Severus Snape had been, and still was, something like his uncle, or his godfather, or his stepdad. Nobody knew and nobody could, even if they promised not to tell. If people learned about it, they would hurt Severus. The Malfoys were saner and healthier than most pureblood families, precisely because they were not as pureblood as they claimed to be. Again, Harry couldn't say, because then Lucius Malfoy would hurt Severus. There was a basilisk, alive and roaming the pipes and tunnels of Hogwarts. It was a mostly friendly basilisk, and Harry just couldn't stand the idea of someone coming to kill it. He liked music. There were other smaller secrets. No one would die if they were revealed, but Harry clung to them all the same. Severus had a tell. His face would be impassive, his voice perfectly even and smooth and devoid of all inflection. But if he found something funny, his left hand would twitch, and he would close his fist instead of laughing. Harry probably was the only person who knew. Maybe Remus did, he didn't know. Twice, Severus had found one of Ron's comments funny. Whenever Professor Shacklebolt made that little competition with 20 points and a big chocolate egg award, filled with smaller chocolate eggs, Harry could have won it. Came very close, in fact, but in the end, he stopped himself and anyone else coming behind and let Draco Malfoy snatch the prize. No one, not even Shacklebolt, was any wiser to what Harry had done. This was a secret, because the Gryffindors wouldn't understand, even if Harry did explain that he owed Draco, and how he owed him. They had put up some awards in the Shrieking Shack. Someone obviously remembered, but that wasn't the only secret passage into Hogwarts. And there were others. One of them had the ceiling cave in, unfortunately, so they couldn't actually get inside the castle through it, but otherwise it was wide and deep, paved with brick and worked stone like a catacomb. It wasn't a bad place to lay low. Remus was angry with Sirius. He was angry because Sirius hadn't waited like they had agreed they would for the perfect opportunity. He had rushed in, knife in hand, and now Dumbledore knew they were there and Peter had gone into hiding. It had gone wrong, but Sirius couldn't bring himself to regret it. Remus was pale and permanently cold, and they were eating whatever Sirius could scavenge in dog form. Waiting was the most sensible thing, but if he had caught Peter now, he could prove his innocence, and he would be free, and he could access his funds freely, and he could move Remus and Harry into his house. Potter. Draco had come across Potter once again in the side corridor. He was standing pressed to the wall with that ridiculous Muggle contraption he always carried around. Yes, Draco? Why didn't he ever use his surname? Now that he thought about it, Potter called everyone except teachers by their forenames, even Crabbe and Goyle. People knew Goyle's name was Gregory because it was nicely alliterative, but for almost 2 years everyone in Slytherin had been convinced Crabbe was called Craig, and yet Harry knew to call him Vincent. But that was beside the point. The point was that Potter was definitely going behind in DADA. The point was that Potter thought himself so honorable that he would let Draco win. I don't want your stupid pity. Do you understand? I don't need it. What? Are you going to throw the Quidditch match, too? To Draco's horror, Potter seemed to consider it. Would you like me to? Oliver would be devastated, though. No, I'll beat you myself. Okay, then. Draco stared, and Potter looked back at him with a gaze that was just so clean. Potter looked at people absolutely free of expectations, waiting for them to reveal if they were good or bad. Look, Draco, I'm grateful. I owe you. You don't owe me anything, snarled Draco. I did nothing. Certainly not to you. I'm going to consider you my friend, nevertheless. Dear Merlin, the rumors were true. Potter was mental. The end of the semester came with Harry passing potions and DADA quite adequately, and charms and transfigurations probably by mere pity of the professors, although he had managed a little bit of an ingorgio, so Flitwick couldn't complain. Care of magical creatures was fine. A bit boring, perhaps. Astronomy just didn't hold Harry's attention. Out of the 10 celestial bodies they were supposed to identify, Harry could only spot Cassiopeia. He completed the exam by telling Professor Sinistra everything he knew about the myth, which was quite interesting in Harry's opinion. Also, if you found Cassiopeia, you could then find Polaris, which was not very bright, so this trick was good. And then you would know where the North was, and that was the end of Harry's exam. It was the last day of exams. It was a day of death that tasted like bitter black tea. There was something wrong in the air today, and Harry didn't know what to think of it. He hadn't felt any foreshadowing when the men for the ministry came to his house. Perhaps this was nothing more than an electric storm coming toward them. Today, poor Buckbeak would be executed. Unless Harry managed to do something about it, which he absolutely intended to do, because of the basilisk, who had actually killed people, while still roaming the pipes and enjoying songs, Buckbeak deserved to live all the more. It was bitter. Harry saw once again how skewed the justice system was. And here was the thought, intrusive and repetitive, no matter how hard Harry tried to push it away, that Buckbeak was taking Harry's place with the Malfoys, that Buckbeak's death was the price of Harry's freedom. Professor Trelawney made what could might very well be an actual prophecy, different voice and everything, and Harry didn't care. She had been on him all semester about the Grimm stalking him, and frankly, the only gigantic black dog Harry had seen lately had been very friendly. Both Ron and Hermione agreed that an omen of death wouldn't allow humans to pet him. And Bellyrub, Ron agreed. Harry didn't consider himself brave. What he was so scared he had become unafraid. Voldemort was terrifying, he understood he was, but Harry had been 10, and both Severus and Remus had told him that he should not be afraid, and look at that. The lesson had stuck. He wasn't afraid of Voldemort, and he wasn't afraid of Sirius Black. Harry wasn't afraid of dying. There were so many other things that were worse than that. The dead don't suffer. There were other things to fear. When Ron was attacked, Harry was afraid for his friend. When they followed him down the tunnel, he was afraid for Hermione, and when they finally crawled into the shack, Harry was afraid for his dad. Remus was yelling at Sirius Black. He was telling him that he was an idiot. Of course Remus would face down the man who had killed a dozen muggles. Soon after, Severus arrived, wand blazing, and hecked Sirius out of the room. "No, wait!" Remus said. And then, to everyone's surprise, except Harry's, Severus stopped.
"You are friends with Snape! And you never told!"
"As unexpected revelations go, I think Scabbers' true nature still takes the prize, and we should all focus on it," said Harry very sensibly. "The rat was a freaking man. Sirius was not a demented murderer, at least definitely not a murderer. Remus was there, within reaching distance, but everyone had to focus on the fact that Severus would listen to Remus because, well..."
"Nah, I agree with the Weasley boy," said Sirius Black, infamous alleged murderer. "What in Merlin's beard, Snivellus?"
Harry and Remus made the exact same expression, lips parted and twitched to the side, and eyes looking to their right, as if they wanted to keep talking to you. They really did, but they believed someone outside the frame was calling them sorry. "Gotta go." Severus for his part stood there, wand raised and black robes improbably clean given the dust. Ron looked terribly affronted by everything. As soon as Scabbers was forced to transform into Peter, Ron had jinxed him before anyone could move, sent him flying backwards and everything. When Peter tried to beg Hermione for mercy, she kicked him. After that, he didn't say much else, prompted because of all the spells. He certainly wasn't conscious to hear the short explanation about Severus. They made their way back to the castle, slowly. Sirius chattered at Harry non-stop. It was a bit overwhelming, actually. He told him about his father and about Remus and about a house in London that he hated, but they could all move in if they wanted to. And he was Harry's guardian, so of course he would sign the Hogsmeade slip, and even better, he could also homeschool Harry if that's what he wanted. And then, they had all forgotten about the full moon. Remus didn't hurt them. Severus knew just the spells to keep him at bay. And Sirius transformed, because he was a dog. Oh, how Harry had always wanted a dog, and shepherded him away into the forest. But Peter escaped. He took with him all the dreams Sirius had been spinning. And Harry... Harry had only gotten a hug that was too short and too cold. He had gotten barely 50 words of his dad, but they were just for him rather than for the whole room. The Dementors came. There were so many and so tightly packed that it was impossible to count them. Harry felt as if he had called them, as if the hollow well that had opened in his heart at seeing Remus transform were attracting them. This had been such a good year. He had finally started to feel at ease in Gryffindor. Quidditch had been great. Remus was free. He had music back. And now it was gone. The Dementors were closing in. Harry had had a hug with his dad. Too short and too cold, but a hug nonetheless. That assured him he was alive. Harry had gained a godfather, even if the number of people wanting to see him dead remained stable. All this was enough to cast a Patronus powerful enough to scatter the Dementors and even completely destroy a couple of them.
I for one am very glad you remembered to bring your bloody wand, mate, said Ron, pale and shaky.
The night wasn't completely ruined, though. Hermione mumbled to herself for 15 minutes and came to the conclusion that they couldn't do anything to stop Peter from escaping.
There is a prophecy, Harry. Until 30 minutes ago, you thought Trelawney was a phony. Come on!
But they could do something else. She took her time turner and they went back in time and saved Buckbeak, which did wonders to cheer Harry up. Also, it helped Ron and Hermione understand Severus's true nature, because Severus spotted them, oh yes. Severus saw them as they dragged Buckbeak to the forest. Severus, who was at the time standing with the Harry, Ron, and Hermione of 2 hours ago, after the Dementor attack. This explained his sudden compulsion to draw a bewildered Kingsley Shacklebolt into conversation, and his loud insistence that everyone should go look at the lake. Because Black had escaped in that direction. He hadn't.
He has a permanent poker face,
whispered Hermione as Severus waved Cornelius Fudge, Minister of Magic, in the direction of the lake.
You just have to learn how to read him,
explained Harry while petting Buckbeak's head to keep him quiet. I know for a fact that he finds Ron very funny.
Funny?
Ron was having a day full of affronts. He's given me more detention than McGonagall ever has. Not true, it was a tie.
So, Severus knows Muggle music?
Sirius sounded both surprised and appreciative.
Wouldn't have guessed it. I suppose it can't be completely awful, then.
Really, that is what redeems him in your eyes. Sirius shrugged at Remus's words. Well, yeah, his shoulders and pursed lips set. I would have thought that him rescuing Harry from the Dursleys would be it.
Anyone with half a decent bone would have done that. He could still be another prat,
Sirius explained genially.
The music, that speaks of a man's character.
That, and perhaps the fact that Severus had helped them escape the Ministry Wizard searching for them in the forest, and gave them what little money he was carrying with them. Severus went with the whole story to Dumbledore. As much as he despised Sirius and loathed the idea of him spending time with Remus or Harry, the truth was important. The truth about Pettigrew, if anything. He let the jealousy he felt at the idea of Sirius and Remus hiding together seep into his voice so he would sound natural. Dumbledore congratulated Severus for his good character. The news changed a lot of what they knew. Voldemort had gotten an ally last night. Unfortunately, the same could not be said for the Old Order. Black was too unstable after his time in Azkaban, not to mention Lupin, who had kept Harry locked up all those years. Unlike the Muggles or Hogwarts, who had never locked up Harry, as what Severus didn't say, he had great self-control.
Black will attempt to contact Potter, Severus said in his usual smooth monotone. He is still his godfather, after all.
I have no doubts, answered Dumbledore, but I don't think he can be encouraged. Sirius is too volatile, I'm afraid. Too rash, as we have seen tonight. Putting the children in danger. And Remus, what could have happened had you not been there to intervene? Harry has just started to find his balance.
I don't think their influence will do anything more than upset him. Dumbledore spoke as if he were thinking to himself, rather than talking to Severus. But he suddenly lifted his eyes to him, those piercing blue eyes.
I hope I don't have to remind you, Severus, that Harry's safety has to be the priority here.
You know it always has been, said Severus easily.
Only it wasn't. One look at his eyes when he was 3 years old, and his happiness had taken the first spot. Besides, he wouldn't be a Slytherin if he didn't ambition for both. Happiness and safety. It could be done.
Harry didn't know exactly how to feel when he got on the train back to London. There was sorrow and relief all mixed together, and below all that, a newfound sense of balance. Harry had spent 2 years with the ground rocking under his feet, and now at last he knew where he stood. He would not fall. He had friends, he had a group, and he had found the rhythm to dance to this mad song. It was a couple of hours before arriving to London, when everybody started to feel tired and he didn't want any more candy. And there was a penny in Harry's mind that had been lodged in between a few memories, memories that were now shaking and relocating. And the penny dropped. Well, well, well. Remus had a very good poker face, too. End of chapter 4.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page as well as the Tumblr of Author Andrina. First Pass editing by Ohana. Music by Sean Johnson. If you would like to commission me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find the stories that I've read, as well as links to my Patreon page, to which I hope you will consider subscribing to support me, and my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.